Hello, this is Joe, and you're listening to the O Gatekeeper podcast, where every week I'll be talking to my people about what gets them up in the morning, what their purpose is, and why they make things. Hopefully, it will inspire you to do the same. Thank you. You can get episodes early and without advertisements over at ogatekeeper.com, as well as weekly bonus episodes, playlists, and my Joe and Friends series. Enjoy. This week, we have one of the most beautiful human beings and awesome teachers I've ever been in the presence of. I am grateful to say Kenny Beats is in the studio. Come on. Come on. Do you want to explain to everyone what that is, please?
Get fucked. This is the Wander Tone. That's all I can say right now.
Is that it? You're not going to explain what it is. You have to do it in a boring way. Do it in a Kenny way. Get everyone excited like you got me excited. Do you know if like Bowen started talking about a synth, I'd literally punch myself in the ear.
Basically, the point of this thing is, why do I do all this stuff in music all the time with only the tools I've been given? Why not make myself a tool? Was the point of this thing. And so it was really just like, one, selfishly, to gatekeep everyone else in the world and make a sound that only I can make. It's like, how can I make a sound that you can't just pull up on the 20 biggest synths that we all use or the 20 biggest pieces of software? And so I went to the most insane person I could possibly find, Leon Dewan, who built the, what the fuck was it called? What was the thing he built for Trent Reznor? The Swarmatron.
That's it.
He built the Swarmatron years ago and was famous for that. And he does analog synthesis. So basically, anything that you see, any synth you ever see, if there's a LED screen on it, or if it has presets or anything like that, that means it's not truly analog. And so there's nothing digital or computer based about this synthesizer. Every single board was hand etched, you know, every single circuit board, every single filter was like dialed in by Leon specifically. There's no recall, there's no presets, there's no saving, there's no, you don't really have any kind of visual cue of what you're doing. And then I made it so the entire thing has no text on it and it all just has symbols. So it's really like, you're forced to be intuitive and no one can outsmart anyone else. So guys who understand oscillators and FM and this and that, they're no better than you or I on this because they can't tell what fucking anything is either.
I love how you say you or I, like I'm good with fucking
But what you do when you step up to a synth and what I do when I step up is not that far off other than some practice, because I step up, I just turn knobs. You know, I understand sometimes the general signal flow of like an instrument when someone's explained it to me, but like I'm just trying to get a noise out of it. And now when I can't depend on reading it and I have to hear it, it was really inspired by these EQs by this guy named Marshall Terry. And obviously there's no text, he just puts low cut, high cut, mid boost, and so you have to listen while you EQ. You can't go, oh, I know with a kick drum, doom, 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 and rely on, you know what I mean, the million other times you've made a song. You have to focus on this and what this song is telling you in your ears, which is hard.
I think it's an interesting thing with your personality, though, because one, you're insane, and you're like, I'm going to build a synth, which is magic. But there's something about it and something that you've introduced into my life that I didn't have before, which was a sense of like empowerment with making shit. Like, you're like, you doesn't matter that you don't know how to blah blah blah, and I think it's like a really elevating thing to be around someone like yourself. That's like, you do the hard work. You do understand fucking oscillation.
Yeah,
it, like, and you have.
But it doesn't inspire anybody. It doesn't inspire anybody to tell them that.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. But
it inspires people to say, you and I are on exactly the same fucking playing field and I'm doing this, so you do this now. It doesn't, if I explain to them what I learned in my Berkeley degree before I tell them something about music, they're going to go, well, you're a fucking Berkeley guy. You know what I mean? If you're an oscillator guy. It's like, if I just say, I suck at this, and this is how I got good at it. You go, damn, I suck at that. I can get good at that too. It's not inspiring to explain to someone what you know. It's inspiring to tell people what you don't know when they already feel like they have something to learn from you, because then they're like, oh shit. We're both learning. We're neither one of us is we're peers,
It's like, I don't know. Whenever we hang out, I'm like, I am fucking so far behind.
No, but that's the
It's
feeling,
great.
though. That's the feeling. That's like, whenever you're with someone whose music taste is just like, how do you fucking know this much about all these weird bands that no one else knows? And you leave a room being like, normally I can understand most all of the references or things that people, talk about in art and music, because you are unbelievably versed in film and music and so many things. But I know you have those homies who make you go, fuck, I didn't know about that. And those are the most valuable homies. Being the smartest guy all the time is fucking boring. Like being in a room all the time and having friends who you're the one who's pushing it the hardest. I always tell you every time you say this to me, who they are for me. I always tell you that, like, I'm nowhere near the level of like empowerment and ideas and stuff that like my best friend is. But he holds me to that standard. I hold you to that standard. You hold the boys to that standard. It trickles down. But again, it's like we're the same. You and I are the fucking same. You're as insane as I am.
I wish we lived in the same city, man. Would you ever see yourself in Bristol?
When I think about as someone who's not a father, becoming a father, what is the most cliche thing you think about? What have I not lived out yet? What have I not done yet in my life before I'm about to have this kid? My focus will now be on this person. And one of the things I think about is like living in another place for an extended period of time and just creating and being, and like Bristol meant nothing to me before meeting you guys. And even in meeting you guys and you guys being from there and showing me like, oh, whether it's Massive Attack or Portishead or Skins or me learning all the things that came from Bristol that I like already knew, I've started to realize that like Bristol does have this kind of like it fosters creativity in its own weird dark way, and there is this kind of a there's a Bristolian kind of sense of art and stuff that I now attribute to all these great people I mentioned and you guys, because now it's a thing, it can't be ignored. It's like when Pharrell, Benny Blanco, Timbaland, and Teddy Riley all came out of Virginia Beach, like,
And clips.
I mean, and Clips, it's like, and 10 others, but it's like, there's something in the water in Virginia Beach, and I'm sure there's something in the water in Bristol, but like, I would not do it for 6 months.
I mean, you wouldn't last 6 months in Bristol. It's a beautiful place, don't get me wrong. I fucking love this city, but I think like there's a pace, there's a pace that your cognition works at, that like you haven't always lived in Los Angeles, so people that might not know, you've moved there. And there's like, I'm not saying that you'll forever desire the pace of LA, but there's a limit. I think to the subtraction of that, either you go, it's not peaceful enough to choose it for peace, you know? And it's not thriving enough in terms of, I don't know, it's like there is an
Industry,
incredible
creative
history
industry.
there. Yeah, it's just a weird place for that, because there's like more musicians per capita than anywhere else in Europe at one point when I was at uni.
Wow.
And like you could tell, like we were surrounded by incredible musicians, and like all the practice rooms we were working at, just coming in and out, the bands that we were working around was just incredible. It was like a buzz. No one was the same, and like everyone celebrated the fact that we were really different and all that, which I think came from the trip hop thing, That clash of fucking like combustion culture clash,
Yeah.
like literally like sound clash,
Yeah.
sound, So there was like, I wouldn't say, I
I think what's
also wouldn't say
interesting,
London's like that. I just like,
London feels like it's at the pace that New York is or LA is in a lot of those ways. But I think what you're saying would be the inspiring thing. I think the shock to my system of being like, you need to slow the fuck down and shut the fuck up. Bristol would give me that. I'd find myself, you know me truly. Like I'd find myself in situations trying to bring my energy to things and be met sometimes with, mate, like we got it. You know what I mean? And I think any shock to my system like that at this point would make me sit in a room, look at my ego, and go, wow, around this type of creativity, I'm not best served pushing my ideas through in this way and inspiring through this kind of like feverish pace of, you know what I mean? How many things can we get going? How many things can we talk about that are exciting? And I'd have to look at my own way of making things and have to find a new way. And like, that's the hardest thing to do. But being forced into it by being in this place where you have to get along, it's like I might write my first like 2012 James Blake song. You know what I mean? Like, I might be able to get into a different kind of bag because I'm hurt that I have to succumb to my surroundings or something. You know what I mean? I just see it being more inspiring.
Yeah, like last year, you took a not a step back. What's the word? You focused on music.
But I don't take step back as derogatory
No. Okay.
because it was. It's like I'm not going into more areas to do more things. I'm saying, let me take some of these areas and put them to the side for now and focus on the main thing and the first thing, which was music, you know? But yeah, dude, it was like I'm already kind of self-imposing some of that like slowing down on myself because someone I really, really highly respect and someone I've worked with for a lot of my career, Jody Gerson, she said to me last year, she checked me in a meeting when I was doing my normal spiel about how great I want to be and how much I want to do and all this ambitious stuff that I always say that's always worked for me. And she said, your anxiety is no longer serving you. Now you need to come from a place where you can focus and be patient with your art and with your ideas rather than seeing how many you can get on the table. And no one else around me knows how much of an insult, or not an insult, but how much of a true dig that was, except me, because I know that so much of this inspired feeling I give off does come from a anxiety inside of how do I keep holding on to this dream? How do I keep every year furthering the fact that I was playing guitar as a kid and now I pay my bills and my family's bills with music? I need to put my foot on the gas. And it's worked for me. It's like it's part of why I was something in your world that added this new thing creatively for us as friends is because I came in with this. Let's how much can we do? How many things can we do? What can't we do? And now I'm starting to realize that she's right. I was so like I had this fever pace of trying to keep up with myself, and my manager is my best friend and put me in positions to win in content, in live shows, in merchandise, in speaking at schools, in doing charity. It's like we were doing so many things at once that I started to realize like I'm not doing any of these things to the best of my ability, but I won't turn down a new opportunity ever. And that's unhealthy for the first time. Because you and I will never scoff at an opportunity of any size. That's like one of the things we relate on the most is you, of anybody I've ever worked with, you guys have never for an hour lost sight of the gratitude. It's like anyone who's met you guys once, it's so obvious that every blood, sweat, and tear from the first 10 years of Idols is like something you think about. And I mean, even before the band, it's something you think about every day. And I thought I was doing that. I thought by working that fast and that much at that level, I was being gracious to all the people who provided me this opportunity. And I was to a point. And then it started to be detrimental. And then trying to hold up 10 flags at once, none of them were getting a chance to really blow in the wind, you know?
I think I remember talking to you recently about that. It's like I don't know if you were with me or not on that, but like part of it, like I have to check myself when I realize it's from fear of losing it all rather than a sense of like why I'm doing this is like I realize that to find balance and I want to do something where I have conversations with people to try and encourage people to make something, even if it's like, I don't know, a fucking origami. It doesn't matter if it makes you feel part of the universe or liberated or you're slightly more attuned to who you fucking are, it's gonna help.
Yeah.
And like, I think, but like for me, that's why I'm doing it. And like, if there was any sense of like fucking panic there, I'd do it badly. And I've been doing things panically before.
Yeah.
And I think you're really good at spotting it in the studio. when you're not around, and I'm fucking running about, you know. But do you have a sense like that yourself, where sometimes you're like, you just like you're waiting for it all to be stripped away?
Yeah, all the time. And that's the thing is, like, I was watching something, I can't even remember what it was, and they were asking someone about their anxiety, and it was all like a scripted fake TV show. But the first thing that this one character asked the other character is, how often do you think about worst case scenarios? And I couldn't focus on the rest of the episode because I was like, I see the worst case scenario first. Before I see anything else, whether it's like me and some bloke alone on some weird street, I'm not instantly thinking like, oh, me and that guy might get along. My first thought is like, protect myself. You know what I mean? And when it comes to things in the industry, you just do that to more and more of a degree, the more you have something to hold on to. And you keep trying to protect yourself with these different things that have worked for you in your life before. But you and I both got our version of success later. And even though I talk about like producing for Kendrick when I was a teenager and these kinds of things, like I wasn't success. It looks like it now. Kendrick in 2009 is not like us. You know what I mean? It's like it rings a certain bell because I know how to say things about my early career that now sound great, but I couldn't get $1,500 together in every 6 months. You know what I mean? I didn't even know how to pay rent with music when that was happening. It wasn't until 27, 28 where I started to be like, oh, this is really coming together. And it's the same for you guys. And so those things that you developed as a human that work for you in your life and in tough situations and when you're challenged and this and that, they don't necessarily work for you as a poet, as an author, as a musician, as a producer. And you have to learn, like, sometimes not like everybody isn't out to get you in every situation. You know what I mean? And that's why, like, to be able to sit back and go, wow, after all these songs and all this music and all these things we have done, there are really people who buy these tickets. There's really people who buy these albums. There's really people who allow us to be in this room right now on this call or in the studio or whatever it is, showing them the respect of like now focusing on what we're really trying to do and really trying to say instead of just like being ourselves the best we can be all the time. It's going to be more poignant as we get older, you know? And like, you and I weren't going through adolescence and puberty and figuring out the music industry. We got on the other side of being grown men and then had to be like, how do we attack this? And I think that's a privilege in a lot of ways. And it's why we are gracious in one way and we act a certain way. But also, like, it's a harder thing to break down those walls when you've lived for so long one way and now you work in this career and industry and like place of mind that is very, very different and very privileged, you know? And you have to like learn what walls are good walls and what are bad. And I had to tear down a lot of walls last year. And the biggest thing for me beyond creativity or music or anything, let's say we can't do music as a job and it didn't work out. Money has plagued me since I was a child. It's just it, I saying it any other way would be saying it too lightly. Because it hurt me as a child to not have things people had or opportunities people had or whatever it was. And I don't have the same sense of class systems that you do. You guys would explain to me. I seriously tell people all the time that you guys were the first people to explain to me growing up in the UK, if you had a big house and you had a lot of money, you wouldn't really make that very well known at school. You didn't want to come off posh, you didn't want to come off this certain kind of way if all your friends weren't. And people would go around to each other's houses who all had the worst fucking cribs and you know what I mean? The not great situations. And you'd be hanging with a rich kid till you were 18 and then you'd figure out like, you live where? Like your flat is where? Like, what are you talking about? It's the opposite here, where it's like I grew up with everything in my face all the time that I didn't have as a kid, and kids wanting to let you know what their first car was or what they got for Christmas or whatever. And it left me with this sense of like, I need to create generational wealth. I need to start this new system that I love. You know how much I love my father. I know how much you love your father, but we're doing something for our future that's different than they were able to do. And we have to find our ways to do that without getting advice from our dads and our parents on how to do that. We have to find our own path. And once money started actually being a thing, or it's like, oh, there's money coming in from music. I didn't even have to go work the day jobs my friends did. I didn't have to slum it in these ways because the number one choice of thing I wanted to do worked out and music's coming in. That makes you, I can't say crazier than when things aren't working out, but it makes you go, I'm gonna chop down anything or anyone in my way that stops this from going on because I'm so unbelievably lucky to change my circumstances with creativity that like the money thing and turning money down as you get further into your career and knowing what bad money is and what good money is, knowing that you guys doing like some ad for some crisps might take some bite out of the next record or maybe doing something with like this really corny brand is going to take you away from doing something with this legacy brand later on, whatever it is. It's like knowing the difference in good and bad money is something that's been the hardest. And last year, having to turn down multiple streams of revenue and say, even though none of those jobs particularly were hurting me, I know it's not the right time to be spreading myself that thin. People can't understand that. Like, someone put out a documentary about me on YouTube last week called Why Did Kenny Beats Suddenly Disappear? It's 20 minutes long. They can't understand why it went from me putting out 100 rap beats in a year to 20, 30, 40 songs in a year, and then doing all this content. And then all of a sudden, I've been gone now. I haven't posted in, what do you say, 417 days since Kenny's posted on
Counting the
YouTube.
days. I love that shit.
So, but
I
like,
love that shit.
your kids are sitting there going, is it someone his family died? Did he have a kid? Like, did he fall off? No one ever gives room to the idea that maybe I said, wait, I'm going to slow down for a sec. Wait, wait. I'm not hurt. No one died. Nothing traumatic happened other than the fact that I realized the path that's been working is not the path that's going to work for this next level. And money was one of the last things keeping me from that decision, truly, because it's like Twitch, I mean, no one is disillusioned to what streaming is now or what streamers are. I think even the most lay person who you and I are friends with or who listens to this has seen something about streaming. A kid sitting in front of a camera in his room talking to a ton of other people and somehow making a lot of money. These streamers are making hundreds of millions of dollars. These kids, Speed, Kai Cenat, these kids. I would sit in my garage and kids would donate to each other and donate to me and subscribe to the channel and gift subscriptions. And we fostered this beautiful community of no transphobia, no homophobia, no sexism, no racism, 150,000 kids in a Discord with moderators, making sure those four things are true at all times, and doing this beautiful thing for kids to make music. At the same time, making a lot of money. At the same time, it turning into like a real source of revenue in my career. And starting to go like, I can't give up on helping these kids. I can't give up on this thing that's allowing me to go work on music that isn't making money. Because I have some money in my pocket this month, so let me go work with a band that really can't afford it, and let's see what we can do. It's like all of that made me think you can't change this path yet. You can't walk away from some of these things, the good, the bad, whatever. And it's hard, you know, it's really hard at this age. It would have been easier at 22 or 23 because I wasn't rooted in my ways or rooted in what's worked for me, you know. And I think you and I talk about those things a lot about like, here, this impasse we're in, even you and I are making records with Nigel Godrich. You know what I mean? We're going to the Grammys together. We're doing these things where it's like, it's a different impasse. It's a different point in our life. And if we want to move forward as like inspired as we did to this point, I might need to move to Bristol for a year. Like we need to refigure out how we do that now. And it doesn't get any easier, which is, I think, kind of a beautiful thing because you feel like just getting on and getting to a point where you're on the lineup. Once you're there, you're good. But from there, it's like you got to figure out how else you want to move. And that's what last year was about for me.
Yeah, because it's like for me at the moment, like after the album, as you know, the album came back and we're like, oh, there's something missing, basically. You know what that is, and I think we're fully agreed on what that
Just
is,
never happened before.
which is a great thing. I'm grateful. It's like some fucking weird like stitch come up, whatever, I don't know, about anxiety. And there's this old dude talking about anxiety is actually a lot of the time just like an accelerator for creative thinking. You got to solve problems. And like, do you know what? I think I'm going to be better for the game if I'm on the bench and I'm just for a bit, I'm watching the field. I'm here, like, what's going on? And I'm doing things like this where I'm actually having conversations and figuring out the parameters of who the fuck I am again with people that I love. You know what I mean? And also just, I mean that in life as well. And like, I think it's really important. And that, like, not feeling guilty for just like sitting still for a minute and reading a book or sitting still and just doing nothing.
It's a hard thing to break that feeling of like sitting on the bench might help you make a better play. You know, I feel like if I'm not getting minutes in the game, I did something wrong, you know, but we're not playing sports. We picked to not play sports. You know what I mean? I've been watching the Knicks this week because my dad played basketball. He loves watching basketball. And I've been watching it with him this week. Like, Knicks were our team. They're finally doing okay for the first time in 40 years. And watching it, I had fun watching it. I was like, oh man, like I played basketball my whole life till I was about 18 years old. And I started Kenny Beats MySpace and it was over. And then every friend of mine in school was like, your big ass is gonna try to make beats for rappers as a white kid from Connecticut when you're 6'7". You could go to the league. Are you stupid? Like every single person around me was like, why are you not playing sports? And I remembered this feeling while I was watching those games this week of like, wow, I had this moment of like, man, I miss basketball. I love basketball. I spent so many years of my life with this sport and this like way of thinking and this camaraderie. And I was thinking about my teammates in high school and I was thinking about all this stuff. And then it rushed back the real feeling, like the actual feelings I felt in tryouts, in games, on like in the conversations about if you're going to go D3, D2, this or that. I grew up tall. I'm 6'7", 2 meters tall. You know what I mean? For people who are on the metric.
I mean, literally no one.
I literally was like in this position where my whole life I was given this gift of size and people couldn't understand me going to use my brain and my hands instead of like use my height. And sports took a lot out of me. That trying to be like, I think about some of these kids in the league right now who are like 22 or 23 years old, and you're the best player on your team, on the best team in the NBA, and you have millions of grown men there comparing and contrasting how strong you are, if you're good enough, is he a Jordan, is he a LeBron, is he even fucking close? I hated that. I hated not the competition between players. The surrounding competition of sports. And I grew up in a town where it's nonstop D1 athletes. There's kids who are getting full rides to schools to play two sports, and they're valedictorians, and their dad ran a hedge fund, and they're rich. And you're sitting there being like, this feeling of competitive, like with money, with sports, with all these, this is what I went into music to get away from. And I ended up going to a music school and getting there. Being with true freaks and weirdos and true talent, and then missing the charisma of all my jock homies, and missing, you know what I mean? Like going out and meeting chicks and stuff. I wasn't doing that with the kids who were showing me Bill Evans records. You know what I mean? It was a real wake-up call at Berkeley that, like, there's things I miss about kinds of people I grew up with, and you know, the camaraderie and things that came with sports. But being creative now in 2025, when your data, your engagement, your streams, your ticket sales are the marker by which you are judged. You get in a sports mindset where you're looking at a band or an act, or for me, a producer or a songwriter or whatever, and you're looking at their stats. And we might as well be counting rebounds because it's the same thing. And you and I didn't get to make music in the 90s. We didn't get to make music in the 80s. We didn't get to have one hit and have our band all make millions of dollars. We've put millions of numbers on the board. You guys have sold hundreds of thousands of tickets across the world. And you still catch yourself looking at this person, they're what they sold, their streams, whatever. That's the thing that I got away from. The reason I was like, I'm not going in to play sports. I'm not going to be an athlete. I want to go this way with my life. And that reminder watching the Knicks this week, I was like, I don't feel that pressure when I people hear my music, because it's such a subjective thing. You're not putting my music up against Michael Jackson's and saying, is it as good as Michael Jackson's? But best believe, if I was a center, you'd be comparing me to Shaq, you know? And like reminding myself of that, and that these data points have never been why I did it or why I want to do it. That's something that's like just as hard as turning down an opportunity or slowing down in your career or whatever, to be able to say like, man, like I need to make something that I want to play for my mates or my partner or the people I love. And if they love it, I win. Because that's how you and I both got here. And that's how everyone who's here, quote unquote, got here. You made something that made the people you know freak out, and they all became evangelists for you. And like, I just try to do that now. Like, if I can get Dylan and Mike to look at me like, how did you do this? The rest of the world will come. You know, like if I can get my mom or my girlfriend to cry or something, like everybody else will come. And once you have followers, you start asking your followers questions, but ask your friends questions. You know what I mean? Like it's not where you should be making music.
No, it's fascinating thinking about that, because it's like, the way you do it is you encourage me, whoever you're in the room with, to be their own evangelist, right? Be a servant to the song. When you do that, you'll find your path as the best, most expressive, or fucking most acute, or whatever the kind of person they are. Doesn't matter. The most them way of doing something. And you either tool them up, you articulate them, or you give them the tools to do it themselves, dependent on who they are. And it's really fucking amazing to be around. I remember writing songs way before we got anywhere. I don't even think we were playing. And I realized I like one of the criteria for me as a song to be successful was I get really excited by it. I have this thing and I'm like, oh fuck, that's the lyric. But it kind of always had to make Dev laugh. I was like, is Dev laughing? And he'd be like, oh. That thing of like, and God, that was what, I don't know how many years ago now. And
10.
like, yeah, at least.
Jeez.
Oh, how old am I? Fuck me. Maybe 15 years ago, bro. 15 years ago. When you were still playing basketball. But yeah, like that thing, that's what I think was the interesting thing about you and I, and projecting that onto other people and what we can teach them. It's that like line of what is success? What are you doing it for? So like there's a guy who's like in a band and he's talking about how to promote, and I was like, bro, I can't help you there. Because when I had to drive this band, no one gave a fuck about bands. No one gave a fuck about five white guys with guitars. It was 2010. It was the most bloated, over fucking thing driven by cocaine, the worst music, shit bands coming out every 2 days. It was awful. And I was like, do you know what we're gonna do? Start a band. And everyone's like, cool, okay. But granted, it did take about 8 years to get out of the fucking room. But like, I didn't even think about it. I didn't, my head was down and I knew what I wanted to do, and that was great. And then each micro fucking progression was a fucking win. And I
Gives
got
you
up in the
six
morning.
months of confidence. One tiny little W can get like 6 months of like, it's, I'm gonna keep going. You know, I was gonna. I always think about when an older kid gave you a high five, or like an older kid called you cool. That's like you'd live on that for like a year when you were seven. When you were seven, if a 15-year-old like gave you any form of affirmation, like someone, because you know there's that weird divide where like, I never had siblings, but I know it just the same of like when you're in that teenage year of like you're cool and you're finding yourself as like a semi-adult, kids are such kids to you. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to spend time talking to a 10-year-old, but I remember when my older cousin or somebody would be like, "Oh, that's dope," or "nice shot," or anything. And it's months of being like, "Damn, Pat said, like, I made a good shot." You know what I mean? Like,
Is Pat a
that's
real
how,
person? Is Pat a
that's my cousin.
real?
Yeah, that's my
Oh,
cousin.
sick, sick, sick. Shout out to Pat. Shout out
But like that's how it always felt for me. It's like, oh, this, even if like this rapper responded, I'm gonna keep sending messages. You know what I mean? Like somebody, like one person rapped on something who doesn't even have a name. My beats are rappable. Like, fact, one's been rapped on. That's enough for a year. You know what I mean? Whenever there's nothing before it. And it's the divide I always think about between the person who loves music but goes, I'm not the type to make. I could never play. I could never sing. I won't make it. I just enjoy it, or any type of art. And then the person who is the same exact person goes, fuck it, let me just make the worst thing ever. Let me just make my first song and it'll be the worst thing I'll ever make. That jumping over that line is like so thin. But you giving someone that pat on the back, they will jump. You know what I mean? If you can tell someone like, just fuck up and delete it, it'll be the best feeling you've ever had, whatever. If you can convince someone to go from like, is that for me, to let me try it, biggest gift that you can give somebody. And like those little, like you're saying, those micro wins, they carry you. And then you get to the point where you're us now and you're on a podcast having macro wins going, is anything worth it? Is
Well,
any of this
that'd be yeah.
good?
Wait. We're not doing that because we're
You
like,
know,
you know. But that's the
generally.
key. That's the key. I think that to longevity, longevity, whatever. You can be someone who's like fucking, in their career in music or art or film or whatever for like 60 years. They might be fucking miserable. Not worth it. Go ahead, like whatever. But I think for us and our longevity so far, I mean, I'm way older than you, but like how we've got to this place is a sense of excitement. That thing of always looking for the micro wins. But you are your cousin Pat. At some point you're gonna have to just be there. I got sent this thing by this film director the other day, and she was like, "Oh, like I've started making music." And I listened to it. It's fucking sick. I was like, this is sick. And it sounded like someone who was making music, writing songs and being playful with it. And kind of, doesn't sound like it's their first song. Do you know what I mean? It sounds good, but it does have that sense of like she's a successful film director. She's been working on that. She's one of the best, but she's just like, fuck it, I'm gonna do that. And you can sense that sense of like, I don't give a fuck what anyone thinks. She sent it to me. It's not mixed and mastered, or it might be, but whatever. I was like, that's so sick. And that's why she's there, is because she's, do you know how many people in our industry is blagging it? They are fucking winging it day to day. Not saying they don't work their ass off, they haven't learned their craft, whatever. But there's a point where every However, and the more successful people do it way more often, where they go, I'm just going to try. I don't know, but I'm going to get someone else to do it. Fuck that. I'll just learn.
You know what blew my mind a couple of days ago? I was at a barbecue, only knew the people who invited me to the barbecue, didn't know a single person there. I'm sitting with Jinju, and we end up talking to this couple. They're just eating food like right where we were sitting, and they just seemed like a very just normal kind of like run-of-the-mill couple. You know, they're really cool. And we were just talking to them, and we asked them what they do. The husband is a data scientist, and the wife works in politics in some way or another, or has for a really long time. And so, right off the bat, my girlfriend designs and styles. I'm Mr. Music guy, and it's like, oh, like we're like two creative types, and you guys, and they, because they, when we talk to each other about what we both do, they're like, oh, that's so cool, and da da da, and they try to write their jobs off and go like, well, like data scientists. And he laughed when he said his job, like they're made it to be this thing of like, we work those kinds of non-creative, that we're not that type of creative people the way you guys are. We're not the same thing. Then they went on, after they kind of like made this joke about like how boring their jobs were, they went on to say, that the wife has started a class to learn letter pressing, and the husband's been taking portrait drawing classes, and he's really, really good at drawing butts, but everything else hasn't really been coming for him lately, but he's amazing at drawing butts. And them telling me that, Ginger and I, for the entire car ride home, for like an hour on the way home, we're just like, how cool is it for two people in their 40s or 50s, I don't really know how old they were, to try being creative and just try. Just, I'm going to take an art class and then do some art at home. And they're both like, oh, it's so bad and this and that and making fun. But I was like, you guys don't know how insanely hard and rare and cool that is to do, to spend your whole life deciding that you work in this one kind of thing and those artistic things are for the artists of the world. And then one day go, what if I can be an artist? So what? I'm in my 40s. So what? I'm in my 50s. What if I write a song, make a painting, write a poem, whatever? That to me is like the most beautiful thing in the world, because I know way more people who feel like they're next to creativity than I know people who feel like they are true creatives. And that goes for the people I work with in music and art. You know, they are always pointing to someone who is like the real version of that. Oh, but then you can be this unbelievable songwriter, but then there's a Nick Cave. You know what I mean? It's like there's always, even people who are unbelievably creative feel like, ah, but I'm not, it's not as pure as it is for this person. It is. It is as pure if you make it. And like for people to step out of that box and into the box of I can create things, you know, that to me is like, if I could make more people jump into that boat of like, I do make something in my life, that's the thing that I can really do with my time that is more important than any record sold or any even a song that you and I make that makes is really someone's favorite song and they really love it, ain't gonna change their life. Might keep them off the bridge, might do something, you could argue, but it's like you change someone's life by giving them creativity, like giving them that pat on the back to let them know it's worth trying. And I don't know, like I can't say I can even think at this age of something that feels better than showing people your art and them feeling something by Joe, what is better? Sex isn't better. Like you have a kid, so you might know some deeper feelings than me, but like at this point in my life, that's the thing that heals me, truly heals what I got going on is the music and the art. And to see people who love it so much stay as spectators, it is something that irks me, because I'm like, you can have this feeling. You can have this feeling in your own way, and it's not based on the data, and it's not based on how many people love it. It's just the feeling of you created something and somebody loved it. And I was also saying to them, which I know you'll agree with, that these letter presses and drawings you guys are making right now that are the shit ones will be your favorite ones. And they will be the ones that you look back at and go, that's when it was untampered. That's, there was no craft involved. There wasn't even a know-how. That was just me on a page. And like, I think one of the big, I read this somewhere, so I hope someone can actually find where the quote is from that hears this. But I read something along the lines of, we all look at our own art and try so hard to wash the bits of us that we can see out of it. It's like you're almost like making something, and once it stops feeling like that's like me on a voicemail, like you stop hearing your voice and you start hearing like the song and how people are going to hear the song, that's whenever things feel done, I think, for most people in music, when they go, you put it on and it just feels cool, sad, important, whatever it is, and you don't hear like yourself in it. But really, that's you taking away the most important thing about your art. You know, the thing that the awkward feeling of like, that's just me. That's not cool enough, good enough, poetic enough, whatever. It's not true. What makes your art important is that it's from you. Don't wash yourself out of your art. Don't like learn your craft till you can paint a master's painting, but never paint some weird shit like that no one else would paint. You know what I mean? It's like there's a million Dutch masters and there have been for thousands of years. We don't need another one. It's like the kids I went to music school with who play the most intense classical and jazz pieces for every single year that they go to music school, and then they leave music school and they've never written a note of music, and they don't end up working in music because.
It's a privilege to have you. I'll give you a shout when I'm next in LA, yeah?
Yeah, I'll be here.
Many blessings.
Mean anything. You are the key. You
That's the
being
sport of
yourself.
music, isn't it? That's when, that's like just looking for the three pointers and the recitals and things. I mean, I'm not knocking it. I don't know it or understand it. But the thing that you're saying about that is that initial thing, the magic of it. It's something so innocent. I remember my grandma's drawings and paintings. So it makes me cry thinking about it sometimes because it's just so fucking naive. Her paintings were so naive. She'd paint like my granddad sat on a bench or something like that. But it's like, that's Eric Dolphy, man. She
Yeah.
didn't do it for anything other than herself in her little room, man, with these watercolors. And like just sat there watching my granddad sitting on a bench fucking painting.
Are you
And
talking about
she.
your dad's mom?
Hey, yeah, my
Your
dad's
dad's
mom.
mom.
Yeah. And like she'd show me with such joy, and confidence. And they weren't technically good. But it was her, it's like seeing someone's handwriting. If you can just frame a piece of yourself and look at it yourself, look at yourself in that frame, whether it's a fucking timeline on Ableton, or it's a fucking scrap of paper, whatever. Once you've framed yourself, and that frame is a sense of importance and a connection to the universe, you are putting yourself in that frame because you deserve to be there. Your
Yeah.
story is just fucking exciting, as Nick Cave's. Trust me.
Well,
Trust me.
weren't we talking about that? I can't remember if you said this to me. I feel like someone said this to me last time I was with you, but like
You told me last time, I know what you're going to say. You told me last time. Someone
the thing
told
about
you just before.
everybody's mom, the thing about
Yeah.
if you sat down anybody's mom or their nan on the street and had them tell you their whole story, it would be the most unbelievable movie you've ever seen. If they really went through everything they went through and where they lived and their parents and what they dealt with and this and that and their relationships. Anyone's mom's story on any given day could be the greatest piece of art, you know what I mean, that any of us have ever encountered. But like, I believe that. Oh, and you know who said it? Richard Russell. That's who said it. I was again lucky enough for him to say that to my face in this room, actually. But when he was explaining to me why he's making the music he's making now, and that was one of the things he said is like, this whole project he's doing with the everything is recorded thing, that's kind of how I understand like his thesis behind it is like, if you really put a microphone on something for long enough, you won't believe, you know what I mean, what you get back when you listen to the whole thing. It's almost like the dudes who put a camera in the rainforest for 8 years and then we get Planet Earth and you see like some like snail turn into a butterfly or whatever the fuck happens, you know what I mean? It's like you really. These things become beautiful in their own way. And when you're making it and you're thinking about how good it is next to this thing or how many people will like it or buy it or this or that, that's like, it's never the eyes you'll see it in 10 years later, you know? And I was explaining that to that couple. I was like, these shit drawings are going to be the ones that you hang up and the ones that you care about the most, 100%.
So
It's like,
cool.
what do I tell you? What am I the most jealous of anything in your career of music that I didn't get to be there.
Yeah, the shit albums,
I didn't get to be there. I didn't know you guys till later. And those are the moments where it's like, anytime I'm frustrated with you guys, or it's hard, or it's like d difficult in any way, that's my fuel, as I think about before I met you. Now I know all the good and bad. Before I ever met you, I just saw it as this thing. And that's whenever you describe it as like we were scrounging this together, we were figuring it out. And you don't say it like that, but it was like when you compare it to now your process and now the way you guys have learned to move and how you write now, it's like you're like, oh, that's just us in the practice room. You know? That's how you've always said that to me. But to me, it's like, no, like. They're so pure, those first moments of you guys as a band. And Bowen gets so pissed about some. He's like, they're so shit, this and that, but he won't feel that way. He won't feel that. And I think he's actually turned that corner recently where he's like, we miss a bit of that, you know?
Well, I mean, for me, it's like 100%. After Everything we've done was such an accomplishment. Like I'm very happy with what we've done on this last album. But like, I need to be able to be in that room and look over and see Dev laugh. And I want that naivety back. Yeah. Like, all I want is to feel a sense of togetherness, like in a sense of exactly what I felt when we came back from fucking COVID, started touring. We were like the first band out of the starting line. We were the lucky enough in the UK, we were the first band to get going again. Danny Nedelko just suddenly made twice as much sense as when I made it, when I was just fucking writing about the necessity of community. Because suddenly I realized the necessity of community from first person perspective, in the sense of like, I need it as well now. I'm
I mean,
alone.
dude, like was a year ago, Danny Nedelko on stage with Banksy pushing a raft out in the middle of Coachella to fucking 800 million people. It's like that song hit harder than it ever could. What does that tell you? It's gonna keep happening. It's gonna keep doing things you didn't even know it would do. But like,
I
I don't
don't,
know.
it's not like I want to relive Danny or anything, but
Of course.
it's that sense of like, I need, I'm just, man, the world's fucked. Free Palestine, I'm just like, I want to feel part of a community again. And I want to be surrounded by fucking love and electricity. That's all I want. And I'm like, I came into the album thinking about process and pushing myself as a musician. I'm
You
great.
did.
I'm a better musician.
You did, and
Fine.
you are.
I need to give myself a fucking hug and go out there and scream at Dev in the practice room until he laughs.
Pretty much. And I told you that off camera already. That's
Yeah,
exactly
you fucking did. You told me at the start of the process, man.
it. Can we talk about anger? Do you have any anger stuff prepared? Because I feel like I want to talk about anger. If this is going to be a conversation for us that people see right now, and they can go look at a million other convos we have, but like, Joe, some of the biggest breakthroughs we've ever had in our friendship, which led to other stuff, creativity, is like how you've helped me understand the secondary emotion that is anger. I don't know if you planned on talking to me about that today, but I would love to include that based on how our convo's gone, because it really is something that like, not to like turn it onto you, but how, like, I don't even have a specific question for you, but do you think like it's true what I'm saying, that people see in you like, I know this dude has been through a lot, and people see how angry you're, angry on stage, not in this way of like at anything or anyone, but when you stomp and you spit and you make these faces, that's not coming from this performative place or this place of like, here's my showmanship. You're in the middle of a song that is about one of the most traumatic things you've ever dealt with. It comes back up and you push it out. That's part of your songwriting that's specific to you. And like, I don't know, I just want to talk about anger a little bit. Something that like has been so important in our friendship, I feel like.
Yeah, I've been like, I think like that's one of the things is that obviously with touring so much last year and putting so much into every show in terms of violence, aggression, and it isn't performative, but it is. It's a performance. But how I do that is like, I'm not a character actor. I'm a, what's the other one? I'm a method actor, I find myself in it. I channel that. I channel all the stuff I've been through or how I'm feeling, and I fucking turn it into a bottleneck that comes out of my fucking mouth, And like there's because of the way I was when Brutalism came out, because I was so fucking angry, I wanted to murder someone. And that came back again with joy because there were some of the reactions and the way people are and politics and fucking Tories dismantling our fucking country, which I didn't really like in the fucking first place. I love people and I fucking hate bullies. Basically, my mum brought me up from a very young age to not fucking let the bigger guy stamp on the little guy. If you see that, you fucking step in if you can. That's what she told me. Like, don't be a cunt. But whatever. So I always had that in me. And then I think I just, I think with touring and everything, it exhausts you. And instead of taking a step back and just being like, I went back into making music and made the best music possible. But in order for me to be on that record, for my personality, for my experience, the experiential art that I have, is like, well, I need to fucking take a minute and then come back out, because I've still got so much fucking life in me, and it isn't anger so much as violence in it. That's just, everything I love and hate, and it just comes out in a really beautifully horrible way. And I
You told
like.
me though, you said to me, you're the only person who ever said to me, ever, in the midst of being as upset as I can be, you're allowed to be angry. And I've my whole life, especially when you grow up a big guy, you know what I mean? If you have parents who are like my parents, they tell you from a young age, watch how you touch people, watch how you raise your voice. You're not the same size as your friends. You're not the you're not, like when you look at one of your friends who's 5'6" and you're 6'7" and you're a foot taller than looking down at them screaming at them, it can be very overwhelming for people. You need to watch your size. And my whole life, whenever I get upset or get angry, it's about how to think deeper to what the real emotion is that's causing that anger, and how to find ways to calm down, and how to find ways to separate yourself from it, or whatever it is that your technique is to stop it, but never allow it, never feel it. You know what I mean? Never let it go any farther, I think, is what people are hoping you won't do. But with you, I remember you saying to me, bro, you're allowed, you're not doing anything to anyone. You're not hurt, you're not fighting anyone. You're walking with me in a field, like you're allowed to be angry. And that has made me so much less angry for the
Well,
last 2 years.
I think
But
that's the thing, is the allowing you. It's like saying you're allowed, right? What it is, obviously, my philosophy of anger is that it comes from fear, hunger, fatigue,
insecurity.
sadness, grief. Yeah, it's insecurity. So, but disallowing someone the anger, if you just say you're allowed to, it's giving them a safe place and going, it's cool. Not like, yeah, punch me in the face, is saying you're allowed to be angry. And I think with the songs, that's it. I'm going, it's okay to be angry, but then with that, the caveat is the lyrics. But don't be a sexist cunt, anti-fascist, Free Palestine, all that stuff. Is like, but anger is a natural fucking thing. We're all scared. And we're all dangling out in the ether half the time, wondering what is going to happen or how good we are. Are we really loved? And that's what we're here to do, my man, is to give people a mirror and say, it's all good. You're all right.
I didn't mean to take away from your game plan for this talk today, but that just was something I wanted to touch on.
I didn't come with a plan because you're a real prick.
That's a smarter way to go about it.
I love you so much, man. Thank you very much for that.
You too, bro. For real. You know I mean it. I've told you 100 times, but it's nice to put it on record.
And I'm very grateful that you're in my life. Now, before it gets really lame, I'm gonna go to my last question, which I ask everyone. Death row dinner. Brooker.
It's not this, but I will say Glenn and Doug's Cassoulet is like was one of the first things that came to my mind. We Joe and I for 2 years are going to a studio that have two of the most lovely men in the universe who make unbelievable meals for everybody at the studio and just bring an unbelievable vibe to a very difficult process. And shout out to Glenn and Doug in the biggest way.
There's a
But
cultural thing you're missing, though. They're Liverpudlians and they live in the south of France and they out-Frenchify food-wise.
it's
They're the
unbelievable.
best fucking cooks in the south of France and they're from Liverpool.
Dude,
Oh, it's unreal.
I've never eaten anything close. But I think crab legs. I think, or like Maryland crabs. I don't know if you've ever had Maryland crabs. Like they're like small blue crabs, but they're
Right.
covered in Old Bay. They're covered in like this seasoning, and you got to dig all the meat out, kind of thing. And I have such memories of that as a kid being like my favorite shit ever. But definitely crab of some sort.
Great. Right, we're done. So thanks very much.
Bro, all day. Wait, can I play music through this? If I like play a song, will it like come to you through this? Is there a way to do that?
Yeah, do you want me to stop the record?
Yeah, sure. Stop the record. I just want to play Joe some shit.
Okay, just give me a bye between these two so I've got an easy out, and then I'll hit stop.
Oh, sure. Do you want me to say something? Do you want me to say the name of the show or something?
Just Joe, say thanks very much and then goodbye, and that's it, so I can edit that in.
Thanks very much, Kenny. Goodbye.
Bye.
Like how like fucking amazing and lovely and touchy we've been, and then it's like, yeah, bye.